Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
Welcome back to another episode of Stomp This Way. Today we are talking about Ultraman, specifically Shin Ultraman.
Oh yeah, we are.
me and you went through a streak. We did several of the Ultraman movies.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the last one we did was. One of the meatiest movies, maybe.
Zeus. We did Zerth.
I think. Yeah, I don't remember. But we might go back at some point and finish the rest of those. But we definitely felt the need to do Shin Ultraman because it's obviously a quote-unquote big-budget Ultraman movie. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And from the same team that brought us Shin Godzilla. And we'll be bringing us Shin Kamen Rider next week. So, yeah. I'm excited to be talking about this movie. We saw this movie, I believe we saw it in January of this year. I think that's when it was released in the American theaters. Let me check my AMC app. Check my history and make sure that's right for you guys. Because I don't want to be spreading false information.
That seems like much longer ago.
I say this year. It will actually be the previous year, I guess, because we are now in 2024. Yeah, so yeah. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Everyone had a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and, you know, yada, 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 yada. But, yeah, so on January 11th of 2023 is when my AMC app says that we watched Shin Ultraman. So, yeah.
Wow.
It seems so much longer ago for some reason, doesn't it?
It does.
But anyway, so yeah, you know, we saw this when it came out, and you know, when they did a Fathom, I think a 2-night Fathom event release.
Yeah.
Maybe one night subbed, one night dubbed, or something like that. Andrew, I think we alluded to this last episode. Andrew and I went, I think on the subbed night, whatever night that was, January 11th, I guess, and. For some reason, Fathom Events did this. I mean, obviously it was only two nights, but it was a wide release because anytime our local, we have two local theaters, an AMC and a Malco. If you don't know what a Malco is, I think it's more of a regional chain. But
yeah.
For us, the Malco theater is the bigger theater in town, and then we have the AMC, which is the smaller of the two. For our local AMC to get a Fathom event. It's like a really widely released Fathom event. I was kind of shocked that they released Shin Ultraman on as big a release as they did because it's not... I mean, obviously, Ultraman has fans here in America. Andrew and I are two of the biggest, probably. But it's just not something that you're going to get audiences across the country to churn out for in large numbers. And as you might predict, Andrew and I... were the only two showing. In fact, when we went up to the counter to get our tickets or whatever, I said Ultraman, and the girl was like, "What movie?" And I was like, "Shin Ultraman." I was like, "I promise it's there. Just keep scrolling." But yeah, so we went and saw it at our local theater. So that was a good experience. That was obviously the first and only Ultraman film we have seen.
In theaters.
Probably will be the last one we get to see in theaters for a while.
Because
there's nothing really on the horizon. I think they're going to release in U.S. theaters. So, with all that being said, yeah. Andrew and I then, of course, I guess I'll talk about this up front. I got the Cleopatra Blu-ray release. that came out here a while back. Now, I had obviously saw online that the subtitles for this release were bad. Mm-hmm. I think I read that if you like sent your copy back in, they would send you in a copy with fixed subtitles. I didn't do that. So I'm just going to say up front, the subtitles, and I don't think it's just the titles, but the subtitles are bad. I don't know exactly what happened. I don't know exactly how that process works, but clearly like there was probably like a rough draft of the subtitles that somehow got sent to the distributor instead of the final draft of the rough titles.
And it still had coding in
because it still had like coding language, like the parentheses / I. It still had slashes in there that were obviously meant to be taken out, and there were a few just straight up typos.
A lot of typos. Too.
And then the way that they subtitled it, I mean, I've also heard that the fixed, quote unquote, fixed subtitles weren't that great either. But the way that they subtitled it
was not
suited to this film because they
talked really fast.
It's definitely an Anno film, mm-hmm. In that there is a lot of rapid fire dialogue, and you know, usually when they subtitle a movie, you know, they'll like, if someone says two or three sentences in one scene or in like in one
instance,
they'll just kind of put all the text up on the screen as long as it's not too long. They would only put like one sentence at a time up, and often they would take a sentence if it was a longer sentence and divide it up into like two or three different subtitles that would come up and then change. So you were having the subtitles were coming up and disappearing rapid fire, and you were having to read really fast because there's a lot of rapid fire dialogue in order to keep up. So up front, I'm gonna try not to let that experience, this latest viewing experience, color my grade at the end. But the subtitles were bad,
and
it didn't make
bad.
For a great viewing experience with this Cleopatra Blu-ray. Kind of surprising that a company that releases physical media would mess up that bad. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty bad mess up. Anyway, that aside, let's get into some production trivia, shall we? So like I said, this is from the team that made Shin Godzilla with Shinji Higuchi in the director's chair this time. And Hideaki Anno was a writer as well as several other roles, I think, including editor, which is very apparent. This is, according to Wikipedia, the 37th film in the Ultraman franchise. So actually he's tied with Godzilla for now in terms of theatrical releases, wow. I guess, or in terms of future
movies.
Films. Which is kind of interesting. Ben Furuya, who was the suit actor, obviously, for the original Ultraman show, he did do some of the mocap for Ultraman in this show. I think that Hideaki Anno also did some of the mocap for Ultraman himself. Anno had completed a rough draft for a reboot way back in 2013 and submitted it in 2014, but the project never really got off the ground. Anno was then tasked with writing a proposal for a trilogy of Ultraman films, which he completed in January of 2018, and the completed first draft of the script was submitted on February 5th of 2019, which I guess ultimately is what turned into this movie. Production was delayed until late 2019, as Anno had to complete the final Evangelion film before he could get started on this film. Principal photography took place from August to November of 2019. COVID slowed post-production down, resulting in a post-production process of about 2.5 years on this film. Of course, they had initially announced a release date, I believe, for, I don't know, originally I think it was in 2020, and then they just kept pushing it back because of COVID and everything. And then Kenshi Yonezu's M87 track spent a couple of days at number one on the Billboard Japan Hot 100 chart.
Nice.
So there's that. I'll talk a little bit more about Kenshi Yonezu's song, I'm sure, when we get to the score section. But anyway, some awards. Are you ready for this, Andrew?
This movie was
nominated for quite a bit of awards. I just listed them all here. So at the 16th Asian Film Awards, it was nominated for Best Visual Effects.
Wow.
At the 40th Golden Gross Awards, it won the Excellence / Silver Award. Whatever that is. At the 46th Japan Academy Film Prize, which I think is essentially the Japanese Academy Awards, It was nominated for Picture of the Year, Director of the Year, Best Sound Recording, and Best Film Editing, and it won Best Cinematography, Best Lighting Direction, Best Art Direction, and Newcomer of the Year for actor Daiki Ariaka, who I think plays like the really nerdy one of the SSSP, the sciencey one.
The sciencey one.
But at the 77th Mainichi Film Awards, it was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Koji Yamamoto. I don't remember which one he was. Maybe the captain. Anyway, at the 35th Nikon Sports Film Awards, it was nominated for the Yujiro Ishihara Award, whatever that is. And at the 54th Seiyun Awards, it won Best Media.
He was nominated for a lot of awards.
A lot of Japanese and Asian awards. Yes, it was. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I got to scroll down a little bit. There's one more. At the 11th Visual Effects Japan Awards, it won Best Theatrical Live Action Film.
Man.
That's it.
Are you sure?
And then let's do box office. So, box office. This film was released on May 13th of 2022 in Japan. Obviously, they did a Fathom event release in January in the United States, as we've previously discussed. Budget of between $5 and $6 million, made $7.7 million in Japan on opening weekend. U.S. converted to U.S. dollars, outgrossing any previous Ultraman film's full run in the first 3 days of its release. So
impressive.
I mean, that's nice. Now, of course, most Ultraman, other Ultraman films get like kind of, I think, like limited theatrical releases, and then they're like, you know, put on TV or whatever. Nowadays, I think they just send them straight to streaming. They might release them in theaters, but I think they also like a simultaneous release on streaming platforms or whatever. It made about $600,000 in its limited release in the States over a 2-night period. And it had a total worldwide gross of just under $34.5 million. So for a film with a even a high-end $6 million budget, it's a pretty good return on investment, I believe.
Not bad at all.
Not bad at all. So another success for the Shin Universe.
Shinverse.
whatever you want to call it. But anyway, I think we're going to pause right here to listen to a trailer. And then we'll come back. Talk about the cast and crew, read off a synopsis, and then we'll finally discuss Shin Ultraman. See you in a bit.
ボーサイチュール連絡。怪獣らしき不明物体は岩田進行中。家督隊千住藩、班長の田村です。怪獣はなぜかこの国にしか出現しないんだ。核廃棄施設まであと山一つしかない。君の来訪の目的は何なんだ。大変が夜平一の正体ある。
状況は正体が付近に墜落したもよう。いえ、膠着です。対象物が動いています。あれがウルトラマン。霞が関の独立軍連隊へようこそ。バディは相棒と理解している。バディは互いの信頼が第一。巨人の行動には怪獣とは違う知性を感じた。あなたが何者か、正体が世界中にばらされている。
私と一緒にこの星のために働きませんか。あなたは外星人なの、それとも人間なの。All right, we're back. This film is directed by Shinji Higuchi, written by Hideaki Anno, visual effects by Atsuki Sato, music by Shiro Sugisu, once again, and starring Takumi Saito, Masami Nagasawa, Hidetoshi Nishijima, Daiki Ariaka, Akiri Hayami, Ben Furuya / Hideaki Anno as Ultraman, Issei Takahashi as the voice of Ultraman, Koichi Yamadera as Zoffy, Koji Yamamoto as Mephiles, and Kenjiro Suda as Zereb. Ooh. And now Andrew will read the plot summary.
Changing it up a bit. In Japan, the sudden onset of kaiju attacks have necessitated the creation of the SSSP, a team whose sole purpose is to deal with the appearance of giant monsters. During one of the kaiju attacks, member Kaminaga is fatally wounded when a UFO crashes to Earth. The UFO is Ultraman, who merges with Kaminaga in order to keep the man alive. Ultraman and the SSSP fend off multiple kaiju rampages and alien plots, but Zoffy, another silver giant from Ultra's home planet, the Land of Light, comes to Earth and informs Ultraman that Earth and humanity will be destroyed by the planet-killing weapon Zetton. Despite Ultraman's pleas, Zoffy will not spare humanity, so Ultraman attempts to destroy Zetton but fails. He gives the SSSP the scientific knowledge necessary to combat the weapon, and humanity is able to conjure up a plot that will save the Earth in executing the plan. Ultraman is successful in destroying Zetton, but he is sucked into an alternate dimension. Zoffy finds Ultraman and asks him to return to the Land of Light. Ultraman refuses, and Zoffy allows Ultraman to separate himself from Kaminaga, reviving his human body back on Earth as credits roll.
That's right. And basically, that plot summary basically covers the first segment of this movie and the last segment of this movie, because rewatching this film, and I think I thought this upon initial viewing, but it's really hammered home upon a second viewing. This film is really divided into five episodes. It's like they took the plot of about five episodes they liked, you know, remade them with a bigger budget, mm-hmm. and then kind of loosely sewn them together into a one movie. And the first quote-unquote episode is the, what was it called? The Naranga episode? Actually, yeah. First thing we do is, and this is another problem with this Cleopatra release, we get a montage of like all these kaiju attacks with a whole lot of text on the screen that is not translated by the subtitles. But you see like Gomez and several other old Ultraman kaiju, like the freezing monster and the giant turkey bird thing.
And the spider, I think it was it.
Was there a spider? I don't remember if there was a spider or not, but just a bunch of monsters. But the first real episode is the Naranga. Is that the kaiju? I think it was. The Naranga episode. And this is where, you know, it's immediately clear this is from the same creators of Shin Godzilla. The style is very similar, and it's, you know, we get a bunch of characters sitting around a table. There's a lot of like rapid cutting, filming the people sitting at the table at weird angles.
A lot of dialogue.
A lot of dialogue being spit around. A lot of, not as bad as Shin Godzilla, or not, maybe I should say not as much as Shin Godzilla, but still a lot of like commentary on the government and just kind of bureaucracy in general, and how everything and the bureaucracy, all the channels they have to go through with the bureaucracy and everything. So it's immediately clear. And in fact, actually, I need to back up a little bit. I think the strangest creative choice in this whole movie is that, you know, they do like kind of when the movie opens, first you get like five company logos. But then it like kind of does the like swirly, like oil paint color things that the classic Ultraman title sequences do. Mm-hmm. But it first forms the title Shin Godzilla, and then it like flashes and changes to Shin Ultraman. And apparently, you know, Anno said that because of rights issues or whatever, they couldn't directly connect the two films. But for some reason, they were allowed to actually put the title Shin Godzilla in front of the movie. So that was a little odd.
That was very odd.
But beyond that, so anyway, so we get into this first segment, and the kaiju Naranga is attacking. Now, if you don't remember from the old shows, this is the one that like turned invisible and ate electricity or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, he's attacking in like an electrical plant or whatever. The SSSP, I don't know if they're ever referred to as the Science Patrol in this movie, but the Science Patrol shows up. You know, there's, like we said, a lot of dialogue and, you know, what are we going to do, blah, blah, blah. And then Kaminaga, which is one of the members of the Science Patrol, goes outside because there's a child still in the area, and we see a meteor crash to Earth, or some kind of object crash to Earth. And you see in this opening scene that when the meteor hits the Earth, Kaminaga, he's like, you know, covering up the kid, but his head, he gets hit in the head with a rock. But then, you know, Ultraman, of course, is the object that fell to Earth. And he initially is like all silver or whatever, but he beats Naranga. And then Kaminaga seems to be okay. And, you know, they all go back to the office. They have a new member show up. The main female lead of this movie, I think her name is Asami. The character's name is Asami. And she's from, like, the intelligence division or whatever. And she's supposed to be... She wants to... I think she's assigned to directly work with Kaminaga.
She's his buddy.
Yeah, he calls him her buddy. And, yeah, so that's the basic characters. We have Kaminaga, Asami. What are the other ones? Tamura, I think, Taki, and Yumi or something like that, I think, are the team.
Yeah.
And so there's like a... You know, basically you have Kaminaga, who is Ultraman. You have the captain. You have the new member who's, you know, the main female lead. And she's like the intelligence part of it.
She has a weird habit of slapping her butt, I have to say.
Well, yeah, and I don't know. Because maybe the subtitles are different, I don't know if it came through as clear in this viewing. Now, in the theatrical version, I think it came through that her whole character trait is that she is, like, desperately in search of that kind of, like, locker room camaraderie that you get from working on a team. So, you know, she wants to slap her own butt, slap everybody else's butt, and, like, to say good job or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is a nice little character quirk, I guess. I'll say that I think the character work is a little better. It's a little more present than it was in Shin Godzilla.
Yeah.
They at least, you know, I think, focus on a little bit smaller of a cast. They kind of, like, they have her deal with, you know, slapping her own butt, the camaraderie thing. You have Kaminaga's / Ultraman's kind of conflict of, you know, where he kind of falls on the humanity / alien spectrum and, you know, trying to save humanity from the Ultras, essentially, in the end of the movie. I mean, you don't get a whole lot of character work with... The younger kid, the science-y kid, he kind of has a crisis of incompetence or, you know, whatever, towards the end of the movie when he feels like he can't do anything. But then Ultraman helps him to develop the science they need or whatever, and he gets his confidence back. I mean, there's still not a whole lot of character work in this show. You don't really know any of the home lives or the really pasts of any of these characters or anything. You don't really get to know them on a real personal level, but it's a little bit better in Shin Godzilla, whereas in Shin Godzilla there was basically no character work until they kind of in the first half, and then they kind of shoved in a little bit of character work in the second half. Yeah. Anyway. Then you get into kind of the second segment of the show, which is the Gabora? Is that the kaiju in the second segment?
It was the drill guy.
I think his name was Gabora. Yes, it's the drill one. With the drill head. I think they've done a little bit of updates to him for the show. And basically the same thing. Now Ultraman comes back. Now he's got his kind of more classic red and silver color scheme going on. He doesn't have, like, the classic color timer.
No.
Instead, this segment's really about establishing, I think, or one of the big things, that his, instead of a classic color timer, his red parts just kind of start fading into green and then silver as he runs out of power. But he defeats this kaiju as well. And then, you know, somewhere in the middle of the movie, you figure out, it shows Kaminaga's actual real physical body is still laying there dead or unconscious or whatever you want to say out in that field. So it's not that, I guess, it's a little confusing. It's not that Ultraman just stole his form. I guess he did in some way, like, merge with Kaminaga's consciousness or whatever.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, like, how would he have been able to go about Kaminaga's life so smoothly? And he talks a lot about you know, merging with a human or whatever. And being half human, half alien or whatever. It's a little different than what it works in your typical Ultraman show, where they literally, the human and the Ultraman are one thing. And, you know, and he uses the color timer to...
Yeah.
Which, and the color timer is explained a little bit more in this show, whereas he likes, it's used to summon Ultraman's body from another dimension. And there's one cool transition where when he clicks the button, Ultraman's fist like comes out of another dimension and like closes around him, and then that's how he kind of transforms into Ultraman or whatever.
Yeah.
The first two segments of the movie were pretty short. Then we get into the longer segments. So then the third segment is the alien Zareb segment, correct? So yeah. You have Zareb, who is kind of your, you know, if you watch the old Ultraman shows, he was a shapeshifter, and he's kind of a trickster.
Yeah.
He comes in, and he kind of messes with everyone's electronics. Is it he that puts that video of Kaminaga on the internet, or is that Mephiles?
That's Mephiles, because he's the one that turned the giant in.
Yeah, but it's in this segment that it's revealed, but a video is posted on the internet showing Kaminaga is Ultraman.
No, wait, is that
Zareb? It's in this segment. Like I said, I don't know if Zareb was the one responsible. I can't remember, but anyway, so Zareb, he's basically signing a deal with the Japanese government because he's telling them that Ultraman's going to turn against them, and then, of course, there's a Ultraman attack, which we'll later learn is actually Zareb just shapeshifting.
Yeah.
And then he, like, puts Ultraman to sleep, chains him up in a warehouse. But luckily, Asami has sources, mm-hmm. and she is able to track him to the warehouse, set him free. And, you know, I like each individual segment. It's kind of like a throwback, a big budget throwback to an old Ultraman cliche or trope or episode or whatever you want to call it. I do wish that it was more of a cohesive movie with the one strong central plot, but you know, kind of is what it is.
It just goes with the flow, I guess.
But you know, anyway, Ultraman of course comes back, fights the fake Ultraman, shows that it's actually Zareb, and then like uses his classic like whatever you call it, the kind of like ninja star thing he throws, and then slices him in half in a pretty cool move. And then we get into episode 4 of this movie, which is the Mephiles episode.
I can never say his name right.
I can never. Mephiles. And Mephiles is, again, kind of another, I guess all the aliens in old Ultraman shows were shapeshifters, more or less. But he's taken the form of a human, and he's a little more, his plot kind of reminded me of Palpatine and Phantom Menace, or maybe the Trade Federation and Phantom Menace, where they're going to operate kind of within the fringe laws of the Republic and Phantom Menace to kind of terrorize Naboo or whatever. He's kind of operating within the laws, you know, on the outskirts of the laws, maybe, of this, you know, interplanetary federation or whatever they've got.
Yeah.
To basically try to take control of the Earth. And he's, again, trying to basically force humanity into recognize him as their supreme being or whatever by giving them what do they call it? Whatever the thing is that allows Ultraman to turn giant or anything to turn giant.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he does is a callback to an old Ultra Q episode where one of the characters was turned into a giant person. He kidnaps Asami and turns her into a giant briefly. And then, of course, by this point, the world knows that Kaminagi is Ultraman. So the government's on the look. All the governments are on the look for him. So he's kind of gone into hiding. But, you know, he comes in and hatches a plot with the SSSP.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they try to steal the orb or whatever, just as the governments are about to sign a contract with him in the ceremony or whatever. And another thing I like about Mephiles is that one of his character traits is that he repeats all these Earth sayings and says, one of my favorite sayings, or then he'll say, or one of my least favorite sayings, like when in Rome, or, you know, whatever he says. So, and then, yeah, him and Ultraman, he turns giant, as all aliens and Ultraman shows have the ability to do. And he gets into a fight with Ultraman. And then, at the end of this segment, Zoffy shows up, and Mephiles is like, I'm out.
I ain't messing with that guy.
Yeah, I think he knows that, not so much he doesn't want to fight Zoffy, but he knows that Zoffy is a messenger for the Land of Light, and when the Land of Light shows up, that means that the planet is doomed. So it's worthless to him now. But yeah, so episode number 5, the kind of final 5X of this movie, really, is Zoffy comes to Earth and discovers that Ultraman's real name, his Land of Light given name, is Lipia.
Mm-hmm.
He tells Lipia that he has obviously broken their code of laws or whatever by merging with this human and interfering with humanity. And so humanity has too much potential for destruction or whatever, and the Land of Light is going to
essentially eradicate them from the universe.
Is going to use this version, their planet destroying weapon, their Death Star, if you will, is Zetton. It's like this giant kind of satellite thing that kind of vaguely resembles Zetton.
And it says Zetton.
And does the classic Zetton line. And the classic sound effects, of course. And it's going to blow up Earth with this, like, Terra Kelvin ball of energy or whatever.
Mm-hmm. But then they come up with Ultraman gives them the power to...
Well, Ultraman, first he goes up there, of course, the governments are still looking for him, but mm-hmm. he basically tells the guy that played one of the government officials in Shin Godzilla, playing a government official in this movie, he basically tells him, like, I'll destroy your planet or whatever if you don't let me go. So he goes and he tries to defeat Zetton, but like any good planet-destroying weapon, is armed to the teeth with self-defense cannons.
And shields
and whatnot. So he's beaten. So then he's like in a coma,
mm-hmm.
but he left behind a flash drive with the scientific knowledge humanity needs to fight the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the science-y character, gets his confidence back and goes to work. And by the time Ultraman wakes up, they have a plot that they still need Ultraman for, but if he has 1 millimeter, or 1 millimeter, 1 millisecond time window
to hit it right before
it shoots the ball or whatever.
Right when the Zetton's at its weakest point.
Yeah. And then the following explosion or whatever tears a hole in time and space, and he gets
sucked
into a new dimension, which is basically just like kind of like the oil colors that you saw at the beginning.
Yeah.
And anyway, so Zoffy finds him and tells him that, he's proven that humanity deserves to live or whatever, but he wants him to come back to the Land of Light to face justice for his crimes, and Lipia wants to go back to Earth to help defend them from all the aliens that will come. But their kind of compromise is that Ultraman will separate from Kaminaga and I guess presumably die.
Give his life.
So that Kaminaga can go back to Earth and be revived and lived. So the final shot is Kaminaga waking up, surrounded by his teammates. And cut to the Kintsugi-Nezu ballad M87.
Which is a very good song.
It's a good song. Hey, I've become a big fan of Kintsugi-Nezu, but I'll talk a bit about that more in the score section. But anyway, so yeah, that is the film. Like I said, basically 5 episodes kind of remade and then kind of loosely woven into the plot of one film. I wish it was a more cohesive plot, but, it's still fun to see all these Ultraman characters and tropes and all that kind of brought to the big screen with a bigger budget. So, they more or less succeeded in their goal, I guess. It's a different film than Shin Godzilla. Shin Godzilla was a much more... Well, for one, Shin Godzilla was a bit more removed from your classic Godzilla tropes, and it was a much darker film in tone. This is a bit more light in tone, a bit more, kind of action-oriented, not as dark and dour. And they, I think, sticked more strictly to your kind of classic Ultraman formula, maybe a little bit to their detriment than Shin Godzilla did. But that being said, I think it's a fun film in its own right. And, I wish that maybe a little more character work, maybe a little less dialogue dubbing from here and there. But overall, I think they did a good job in bringing Ultraman back for a
feature film
for a new generation. Not that Ultraman needs to brought back for a new generation, because they do that twice a year for the new TV show. But
only if they had better subtitles.
Yeah. But what are your thoughts overall?
My overall thoughts is it was a good film. It brought Ultraman back in a feature film that, shows how all of his shows him off, and shows off all of his villains and monsters he fights, and how the characters themselves, present themselves, all the aliens.
Yeah. I mean, it's the classic Ultraman formula. There's the Science Patrol. One of the members of the Science Patrol, through whatever means, ends up merged with the Ultraman. And then, they fight a series of monsters and aliens.
And the aliens trying to take over Earth, like always.
And always. There's kaiju coming out of the ground or whatever.
Aliens acting like they're friendly, but then they end up turning against...
One thing I didn't quite understand is maybe it was lost in translation. Maybe a result of the bad subtitles. I don't remember what they said in the theatrical version. Mephiles at one... this is all within, one scene. He asked Mephiles if he was responsible for the kaiju. And then Mephiles says, no, humanity polluting the Earth was responsible. But then he immediately follows up that with saying, well, I use this kaiju to do this, and I use this kaiju to do that. So I was like, so was he responsible for the kaiju, or was he not? But classic alien plot stuff. And then, like most shows end, it somehow ends with Ultraman separating from his human host and everyone. Even though usually the next show, they're still
there.
Still there for whatever reason.
Or it could be like Ultra 7 and just clone yourself.
Well, that's what it was kind of looked like for a little bit, because we saw his dead body was still there. But, like I said, apparently he was actually merged with Kaminaga's consciousness or something. So, yeah, I mean, a bit different, but still adhered pretty strictly to your classic Ultraman formula. So, yeah. Yep.
Overall, not bad.
Not bad. Creature design?
Ooh.
Well, there's a bunch of creatures at the beginning in a slideshow. I mean, and they all, Gomez is the first one you see, and I think they took the CGI model for Shin Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of a throwback. If you go back, I think it was Gomez. They used an old Godzilla suit, an Ultra Q or whatever. So yeah. they kind of pay homage to that by using the CGI model for Shin Godzilla. And then you see the other ones that I don't remember the names for off the top of my head.
The ice breathing monster. Wasn't there a flower monster?
There's a flower monster. There's
a couple others.
Couple other monsters. Yeah, and they all look like fine reimaginings of the classic versions of them in the older shows. But the monsters that we really get to know, Naranga at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they do the classic camouflage thing. Kind of has like a flower petal head that opens up, right? Or was that not Naranga?
No, that was the...
That was Gamora, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's been 24 hours since we watched this. But Naranga does the electricity thing, turns invisible.
Yeah, he had the antenna thing that came down and he shot electricity
at us. Shot electricity, yeah, that's right. So he's a good reimagining, I think, of Naranga from the old show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Gamora, they took a little bit more creative liberty with. He's got the drill head that opens up and reveals
his
inner head, which I think was different than the old show. And then he's got these two kind of flexible tentacle drill things that come out of his back and kind of whip around like whips. I think maybe a little too ambitious. We'll talk about effects. Maybe a little too ambitious for what their effects were capable of doing. But, I mean, it's not bad. Maybe they could have dialed it back a little bit. But Zareb, I like Zareb's redesign. He shows up a lot in a trench coat and a hat, like it's hiding the fact that he's an alien or whatever. But he's actually, in this show, hollow inside, and he's also missing his back half. So you can see he's basically just a thin, empty object.
Yeah.
With the blue glowing eyes and stuff. And in parts, especially when he's wearing the trench coat and stuff, I think it's actually a person in a suit or some kind of physical prop. Then you have Mephiles, kind of your classic Mephiles look. Mm-hmm. He's got he's big and kind of dark colored, and he's got the neck V thing that's whatever. He's Matt Phillips. And then we have
Zoffy.
Basically the same as Ultraman, silver, and I think he's still like silver and green or something.
Yeah, he's something like that.
Zetton, kind of like I said, kind of like a satellite type deal that
puts itself together.
Vaguely, once it's like in its final form, kind of resembles Zetton with the giant like yellow breastplates or whatever, and the
eyes,
and does the Zetton thing.
Way bigger.
Planet Destroyer. That's no moon. That's a Zetton. And then, of course, we have Ultraman, or Ultraman Lipia, whatever you want to call him. Like I said, he shows up at first. He's sort of an all-silver color.
Mm-hmm.
He's got, like, a lighter and darker shades of silver. And then when he comes back the second time, he has the traditional red markings that kind of fade and, like, to show that he's losing power instead of the traditional color timer, like I said. He very much looks kind of like your, like, I think the original Ultraman. Mm-hmm. Like, if you remember in the old Ultraman show, which maybe a lot of you haven't watched, there's, like, two different suits. Like, the first half of the show, he reminds me, I think, more of the original suit from, like, the first half of the show. Now, I think the real classic Ultraman that people really think of is the suit that shows up in the back half of the show, where his face is a little more redesigned and a little more, I don't know, angular or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, basically he looks like your classic original Ultraman. I mean, he's got the classic original Ultraman moves. He can make, like, the shield, like the rectangle shield in front of him. He can throw, like, the little, they almost look like gears.
Yeah.
Ninja Star things.
And the Specium
Beam. He's got his Specium Beam, which is, like, his ultimate finishing weapon, which is all, and they...
Mm-hmm.
They use all the for all the monsters, they use all the classical roars and sound effects.
And powers.
And stuff like that. And getting into effects, you know, Shin Godzilla did the same thing. First talking about sound editing and stuff. Shin Godzilla did the same thing with using all the classical sound effects.
Yeah.
Now, I think this show has a few original sounds for explosions and stuff that they didn't even do that in Shin Godzilla. But overall, they use a lot of the classic designs and stuff, which I appreciate. The effects, overall, they are what they are. I mean, most of the CGI looks like it's probably from a PS3 cutscene, you know?
At its best.
So, you know, again, for a Japanese film, especially, I mean, obviously, Godzilla Minus One has kind of reset the standard for digital effects in a Japanese film, but prior to Minus One, this was pretty top of the line CGI that you would see from especially from a CGI heavy Japanese film.
Mm-hmm.
So it works. I mean, it does feel video gamey in a lot of the fight scenes and stuff, but
a little rough around the edges.
It works. It does what it needs to do, and if you combine that with the classic sound effects and stuff, I think it brings enough of that nostalgia back that you can go along with it.
It doesn't bother you too much.
It doesn't take you out of it too much. And then, of course, the explosions and the beams and all that look good. So, set design, all that looks pretty good. So, there's that. Score, Shiro Sugisu again, same as guy that is Shin Godzilla. And just like in Shin Godzilla, he uses a combination of recycled Ultraman themes, recycled Evangelion themes, and then two or three new pieces of music. One's like this synth guitar rock piece.
He did a lot of remade rock themes of the original show.
Yeah, he kind of like electric guitared up a lot of the original themes and stuff like that. So, you know, there's that. But overall, scores, I think it works.
It again
brings back that feeling of nostalgia that you'd have gotten with all the old music and sound effects and stuff.
With a new kind of feel to it.
With a little bit more electric guitar.
What everything needs.
And then, of course, you have Kenshinezu's M87 song, which I just want to, just a PSA for Kenshinezu real quick. Of course, a lot of people know him. He did the opening theme for Chainsaw Man, which that was more of a J-rock song. I think most of his songs that I really enjoy aren't really J-rock. They're more kind of like the ballad type song that you get kind of at the end of this. He just did a song for another very good film that you should see, the new Studio Ghibli film, The Boy and the Heron. His song, Spinning Globe, for that was really good. Kind of depressing if you read the lyrics, but really good. I mean, he's got a lot of good, look him up on Spotify if you liked his song at the end of this show. He's a really good artist. But anyway, my aside. Yeah, so I think that about wraps up our discussion on this movie. Andrew, why don't you give us some final thoughts and a letter grade?
All right, then. Well, final thoughts. I think this movie is pretty enjoyable for what it is. You know, the characters aren't, like, terribly fleshed out, but they are better than Shin Godzilla. Because, you know, there really isn't, like, a main group of characters in Shin Godzilla that really centrals around, like in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, they do, in the, especially, like I said, in the second half, there's the one guy that kind of spearheads it, the operation, and the U.S., quote-unquote, American politician chick that they kind of make the main male and female lead in that movie. But yeah, I see what you, but like I said earlier, this movie definitely
has a core group.
Has a more core group of characters than that movie did.
Has a good like group of five or six people that it just centrals around.
Yeah.
And you know, Ultraman of course is there.
Yeah.
And you know, they have their quirkiness to them. Like in any good Ultraman show. And the effects are, you know, they're good for what this movie is made for. Good enough.
Yeah.
They don't take you, they're not bad enough to take you out of the experience of the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, score is pretty good. I like the score in this movie. It plays with the movie pretty well. It's the rock synth version of all the old versions of the songs, and you know, all the new stuff, and like you said, the ending song,
yeah,
which is a great piece of music.
It's play on words, like they called it M87 instead of N78. I think originally Kenshi Unezu wanted to call it M78, but Hideaki Anno, for whatever reason, just to be a little bit different, I guess, said, "Now, why don't we change it to M87?
Just to be different.
Just to be different.
Yeah, and I think and the creature design in this movie, I think they did pretty well. They changed up a few of the monsters just a tad bit to make it more interesting, and you know, left all the more iconic characters the same, and so fans wouldn't get mad at them too bad.
They're definitely all recognizable, which is important.
Even Zetton, even though he's a way bigger.
Even Zetton, who probably had the most radical change. I mean, obviously, he's a weapon. He's like a planet-destroying weapon used by the Ultras instead of an alien, like he is traditionally.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they did a good job being faithful to the original intent.
Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to give this movie, I think I'll just give it a good old C.
C?
C.
Wow. It's a little lower than I was expecting, but okay. Yeah, listen, this movie, like I said, if you've watched Shin Godzilla, this is very much in the same style as Shin Godzilla from Anno and Higuchi. So if you didn't like that kind of style of filmmaking, probably not going to enjoy this that much. If you didn't mind it, then you probably won't mind this movie. Like I said, it kind of feels like they took five of their favorite episodes and said, how can we, you know, kind of remake these on bigger budgets and then kind of sort of loosely throw them together and make a movie out of it. It almost feels like it would work better as like a 5-part Netflix series or something. But I still think, like I said, I appreciate the way that they've kind of brought Ultraman to the big screen in this kind of big budget manner while bringing back all the classic tropes and ideas and characters you would expect to see in an Ultraman series or whatever. Again, you know, I appreciate, you know, I enjoy the old sound effects and stuff. I enjoy the old music. I enjoy seeing the aliens and all that brought back to the big screen. Yeah, I wish the narrative was a little more, you know, of a central narrative driven, that was a little more cohesive, a little more linear, but you know, it is what it is. I wish there was a little more character work than there is. Maybe a character that I could really get care about. But overall, though, I think it's a fun movie. And if you're an Ultraman fan, I don't think you're going to be disappointed with it or anything. So I'm going to give it, I think I'll give it a, I think I'll give it a B minus. I think a B minus is fair. I think a C was a little harsh maybe, but I think a B minus is fair.
Yeah. I grade. I don't grade just because I really like the series, Aaron.
Well, you know, I guess the next question is it the best Ultraman movie? We've seen all the Ultraman movies, even though we haven't recorded an episode all over all of them. We've seen all the Ultraman movies.
I'm not sure if it's the best Ultraman movie out there.
You know, in fact, a little aside again, I think we recorded one over a movie that I never even went back and edited. So I might as like a bonus episode next week, or maybe one week when we don't have time to record a... an episode, I might dig that out of the files, do another From the Vault episode.
From the Vault.
and edit and release that episode. But I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I don't know if it was the best Ultraman movie ever made. I think some of those TV movies had a better overall story, cohesive storyline to them.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely some of those. I mean, a lot of people are really big on the Ultraman the next movie or whatever it was called.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we reviewed that movie, I think that was the one we dragged Dylan, forced him to sit down and watch with us. And I think our kind of reviews were meddling at best about that movie. I think it's better than that movie. I think, like, some of the newer Ultraman movies, you know, that cap off their TV series are, like you said, a little less segmented. Maybe a little more, you know, just kind of brisk and fun than this movie. But this movie deserves a lot of credit, again, for the production values, for trying to bring back that original Ultraman spirit and all that. I think you can definitely make the argument that this is the best one, just kind of by default. Because I don't think any Ultraman movie we've watched has been great.
Not like... stellar by any means.
No, there hasn't been a great Ultraman movie yet. Even I wouldn't even call this one great. Obviously, we gave it kind of middle of the road grades, but so there's still an opportunity out there for someone to make a great Ultraman movie. Not to say there hasn't been great shows, because there's been a lot of great Ultraman shows.
The one we're watching right now is pretty good.
Blazar is not bad. I still think the Showa era Ultraman is still and Heisei 90s era Heisei era Ultraman. It's still Tiga Dinagaya was really good, of course, and then the classics. You know, you're not going to hear me say anything bad about the classics, but so the shows have been really, really high quality. The movies, there's still the opportunity out there to make a great Ultraman movie that they haven't quite seized on yet.
No.
Maybe if in the future, if they can get the rights worked out, we'll have our big Shin universe.
Oh,
a collaboration where Shin, where Kamen Rider and Ultraman and the Evangelion mechs have to team up to defeat Godzilla or something. It's coming eventually, I'm sure. But anyway, yeah, let's cover a little bit of news here at the end of the podcast. There's a little bit of news out on about GXK. One is, no spoilers here, the runtime I think is confirmed at 1 hour and 55 minutes. Which is the second shortest MonsterVerse film, just a few minutes longer than Godzilla vs. Kong, I believe. Which, you know, under 2 hours, I think that's right at 2 hours. That's about the right length. Of course, 15 minutes of that will be credits. That's about the right length, I think, for these MonsterVerse films. So, no problems there. No complaints from me. Now, the second bit of news, if you don't want any spoilers going into the movie, although if you're... follow any of the fandom pages on social media, I don't think you could have missed this. Go ahead and turn off the podcast now, and we'll see you next week. But it has been, I guess, all but confirmed that Mothra will be coming back for this next film.
I think there's going to be quite a few new kaiju in this film.
I think there's going to be a few. There are going to be quite a few new kaiju. Of course, we have Scar King. They have now have released toys and stuff. Of Shimo, which is like the ancient ice Godzilla thing. We have like an ancient Kong and Scar King and ancient Godzilla and Shimo.
And we have like some dog things, I think.
There's some dog things. There's Doug. The lizard or whatever is back. And then, of course, Mothra will be back in all of her glory.
And you can't forget about the baby gorilla.
The baby Kong, or whatever you want to call it. Yep, of course. And then, of course, our weekly minus one box office update. It is, I think, estimated with the latest 4-day weekend to be around 46 million domestically, or in the U.S. There was a lot of chatter on social media that had passed Shin Godzilla's global box office run at 78.5 million. Now, I read some things where Box Office Mojo, for whatever reason, didn't track Shin Godzilla all the way to the end of its run. So it actually finished with, like, I want to say, like 82.5 million or something, which minus one will still pass that in the next day or two, probably. So it will become the highest grossing Japanese Godzilla movie at the global box office, which obviously is a huge achievement.
It got way more people watching it than that Ultraman thing.
Yes, it's done a lot better at the box office than Shin Ultraman or Shin Kamen Rider. I don't remember Shin Kamen Rider's final numbers. Obviously, we'll talk about them next week. I'll do my research. But it's done better than those two Shin Universe movies. So they might just abandon the Shin thing altogether. I don't know. We'll have to see. One of the producers at Toho did make the statement that they're not going to rush the next Godzilla film. Right now, for them, it's all about quality, not quantity. They'll let Legendary worry about the quantity, baby. And they'll focus on quality. So it might be a few years before we get another Japanese-produced Godzilla film, which I'm fine with. Hey, if it turns out anywhere near as good as Minus One, they can take all the time they need. I'm so excited about that, obviously. And then the other thing, of course, I just want to talk about our upcoming schedule. As I've said, next week we'll finish out the Shin universe with Shin Kamen Rider. And then the next week should be the final episode for Monarch, the Legacy of Monsters. So we'll do a wrap-up episode on that.
And the week after that should be...
And then the week after that, I don't know, we might... Because they took a week off, and then I think they're going to do a recap episode.
So it might be
pretty soon we should be doing a wrap-up episode on Blazar.
And, you know, we'll go from there.
And then we'll go from there. We got a lot of movies. We did get a lot of suggestions from one of our listeners. Very appreciative of that. One of his suggestions was the Evangelion... what do they call them? The Evangelion movies. The whatever. Rebuild. Evangelion Rebuild or whatever it's called. There are four of those?
I think there's like five.
I think there's four. There's 1.11, 2.22... 3.33 and then 3.0 plus 1.0, I think. I have been wanting to watch those. I of course, Andrew and I watched the original series. We have not watched the Rebuild movies. So we might watch the Rebuild movies. It might be a good...
Starting point.
Ending point.
Ending point. We're not ending. We're not ending the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I want to go back and review those. And there's, of course, there's a bunch of old Blu-rays of old 50s B monster movies that I had bought for the podcast that we didn't watch, like that giant praying mantis movie, Tentacles.
Hey, I have.
There's Orca. There's, I don't know, there's a bunch of stuff.
I have that giant scorpion movie.
Cue the Winged Serpent, which I actually watched by myself the other day, but we did not review for the podcast. We had on the schedule. What'd you say?
I have that giant scorpion
movie. Andrew's got some old 50s B movies that we can watch too.
Dinosaurs.
The Lake or whatever movie that was actually not bad. We can drag that back out. And then, of course, some that I had wanted to get to before the end of the podcast but didn't, like Anaconda, Alligator, Lake Placid. Some of the classics, baby.
Yeah. Anaconda.
Anaconda. Of course, the question will be, do we want to just do, like, the first one of each one of those? Or do we want to go through all the crappy sci-fi original sequels, too?
We'll get to that when we get
to cross that road when we get there. But anyway... I think that's all we got for you this week. Don't forget that you can contact us at stompthisway1954@gmail.com. We also have a website. Andrew, what's that website address?
It's stompthisway.wordpress.com.
That's right. On that website, you know, it's pretty bare bones, like I said, but you can see our latest episodes, schedule, brief about us page, all that kind of stuff. And then social media, you can follow us on Facebook. And I think, like Dylan said last week, that the Instagram page might is supposed to be linked with the Facebook page, so my posts on Facebook might post to Instagram as well. But anyway, so follow us on Facebook, though. That's where all the action's happening these days. But other than that, I think that's it. So as always, I'm Aaron.
I'm Andrew.
And we will see you next week.
Cause it is